We all knew Sheffield United were going to have a tough start due primarily to problems in the transfer market so far. Those problems were writ large when Paul Heckenbottom's first team sheet of the Premier League season was handed in and showed an 11 that was worse than the side that won the promotion from the Championship. Plenty of work to do on and off the pitch, but hey, at least football's back, and so too is the Star Blades podcast Monday Review. I'm Chris Holt, and with me is Danny Hall to go back over Saturday's return to action for Sheffield United and, of course, the Premier League. Not a winning return, not the best of starts for different reasons. Although, you know, it wasn't the greatest performance, wasn't the greatest result. However, the biggest story from the day was essentially the team that started, Danny, which, if we're entirely honest, is not a Premier League team, is it?
No, I don't think that's being unfair to say.
I'm glad you said that, because I thought I was thinking I'm being overly harsh here.
No, I don't think that's unfair to say. I think Paul Heckenbottom kind of admitted to that afterwards, didn't he? He said that we are lacking the quality. One thing you can never sort of level at this team and this squad and these players is a lack of effort, a lack of commitment, a lack of, you know, buying into the whole club ethos and everything like that. But in terms of the quality to unpick Crystal Palace's defence on Saturday, I think one shot on target. And that was a pretty comfortable save for Sam Johnson. At the end of the first half, I think that kind of tells its own story, doesn't it? There were moments where they sort of huffed and puffed. I think Will Asula had a few moments that he will have dreamed about when he put his head on the pillow the night before the game, when he flashed that shot just wide that looked like it was going in for what for him will have seemed like an eternity. It seemed long enough for us who were just watching on. And the way he sort of dropped to his knees afterwards, I think, suggested that he thought that was going in. Then he hit the side net, and of course, in the second half. But apart from that Norwood shot at the end of the first half, you know, Johnston had a very comfortable afternoon, didn't he? And, you know, United never really looked like threatening a great deal. But to be fair, at the other end, you know, for much of the game, the first half especially, I think they competed very well at the other end, didn't they? It's only when Palace's quality, I think, kind of started to toll in the second half when they got ahead. I think everyone in the ground then realised that was going to be a huge mountain to climb from there. I think United really needed to get that. That's going to sound like the most obvious cliche ever, isn't it? But they needed to get that first goal, I think. They'll give them something to hold on to, because once you go behind in this league, you know, we all know how difficult it is to get back in. So, yeah, as you say, the story of the game was really written from 2 p.m. when the team sheet came out, really, wasn't it? It wasn't even just the starting 11. The bench, of course, was so light in terms of Premier League quality. I think there was two Premier League games for United on there amongst the nine subs. And that was obviously Femi Sariq and Antoine Hackford, who both played, you know, short cameo appearances off the bench before. So it's not even like, you know, you're giving the lads a go and then you can turn behind you and sort of see where you can really change it. Personally, I wondered if Anis Slimani would start after he sort of impressed me in pre-season. I thought he was the...
I think out of everybody, I probably given that he was there a little bit earlier than most, I think everybody thought, well, he's potentially going to be ready. And if any of them, the new players are going to come in, then he would be the one.
Yeah, that's what I certainly thought. I thought he was the most impressive in pre-season before Stuttgart. I think we can kind of put that to one side because nobody really impressed there. But I understand as well against Palace's threats on the counter and stuff, you know, a more sort of, not defensive midfield, but a more solid, is that the right word? You know, of Norwood, obviously Basham and Osborne. You get a lot of protection going that way as well, don't you, rather than just getting the benefits going one way. So I'm not saying I don't understand the selection, but that was one that I thought maybe he would play. I understand Souza having had virtually no pre-season and probably about a day to get used to his teammates and everyone. I understand him maybe starting on the bench. It was just the lack of sort of options as well, you know. Paul alluded to that afterwards. He's made no secret of the fact that he thinks they're miles off where they need to be now, really, not even looking towards the end of the transfer window. They needed to be stronger for now. He saw this as a real missed opportunity to have a go at Palace and really try and put a marker down. First game of the season at home in front of a big crowd, and that expectation, that momentum from last season, try and sort of protect that. Instead, that momentum's disappeared, hasn't it, really, almost, in terms of the players leaving the building. The squad now is completely different to how it was at the end of last season. And even last week, he admitted to us that he might even have to change the way he plays because he hasn't got the players to kind of mould to United style. He might have to sort of compromise that identity a little bit, which is obviously a concern because, you know, this squad has played this way for such a long time. Last season, they got promoted comfortably playing this style of football. So ideally, you know, as a manager, you'd want to kind of carry on that, wouldn't you, into the new season. So the fact that he's even considering having to rip that up a little bit and adapt it, I think that's another concern that will need to be addressed by. There's only one way to do it, spend some money and sign some players.
Well, this is it. I think you would like to think that if there was no evidence of what needed to be done before Saturday, then certainly it was just all there. It was literally written on the team sheet for you that this team, Paul Heckingbottom, needs help immediately. And we're not even talking about, like, this needs to be done before the end of the month. This needs to be done, like, today and the next couple of days. It's, because otherwise, I already felt like the buzz had been taken away from everybody. You know, all the people who, you know, I missed Saturday's game, but there was still a big crowd there, and by all accounts, the atmosphere was really good. But could you imagine that atmosphere had, and listen, I don't want this to turn into a whole big thing about Sander Berg leaving and Illiman and Jai leaving because it's all water under the bridge now. But if those players hadn't left, or if they had been better equipped in the transfer market than they have been or than they have shown, then the atmosphere would have been even better at Bramall Lane on Saturday. I just felt like even having not been at the game, just by speaking to people who I know and speaking to, you know, neighbours and all that kind of stuff and friends, they felt that the excitement had been sapped from them a little bit. And that's going to continue to be the case until they get enough players in, isn't it?
Yeah, I was speaking to a couple of pals who were at the game, and they kind of said, obviously, because they get a better idea of what it's like on the Kop and stuff like that, you know, in the thick of it almost. And they reported a bit of a strange atmosphere, really, in that almost a resignation, not to being relegated or anything like that, but sort of, you know, when Palace scored and kind of surged ahead, it was almost like, well, you know, we knew this was going to happen, rather than a genuine belief that they can get back into it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that says a lot. And that obviously, that will possibly kind of transpire to the pitch as well, won't it, if you're getting that from the stands. Someone else as well compared it to a sort of FA Cup style performance where you're like an underdog at home to Palace, you have a good start, and then, you know, the superior team goes ahead, and then it almost just kind of falls into place, doesn't it? And that's obviously a big concern. And yeah, like I said before, you know, hopefully, or in an ideal world, sorry, Paul would have his kind of players in now already and kind of moulding them to how he wants to play. Hopefully he gets them before Forest. Because, as we said, these are a big opportunity for United. You know, it was at 4 of 6 at home. I said 12 points up for grabs. I think the reality came home when Gary Sinclair at the end of the game said next up at Bramall Lane, Manchester City. You know, as we saw last time in the Prem, you know, every point in this league, I was going to say massive, and I can't say that on the podcast. Every point in the Premier League is huge, isn't it? I don't think you can afford to, you know, kind of not sacrifice any of them, but risk sacrificing any of them is what I'm going to say by not being as strong as you can from the get go. Because, you know, as we've seen before, always think back to when United relegated all those years ago against Wigan, you know, when they got relegated by a goal. You know, every sort of margin in this league is even finer than we've been used to. You know, and if you know, God forbid, United do make a damn good go of it, and in, you know, the end of May or whenever the season ends, you know, it does come down to those fine margins. I think it'd be a real shame to to even consider looking back to this kind of period in the season, thinking, you know, if we did, you know, move quicker in the transfer market, if we did move earlier, if we did push the boat out a little bit more, if we did have a bit more luck, whatever, you know, however the kind of cards have fallen, you know, I think it'd be a real shame to look back at this period and just wonder, what if? You know, all you need to do is give yourself the best possible opportunity, isn't it? And then if at the end of the season you're not good enough, you can look back and say, you know what, we did everything we could possibly do. I just wonder at this point in time whether United can possibly say that for whatever reason. You know, sometimes you have to be patient in transfer markets. You have to wait. Sometimes things just generally don't go your way. Look at Illiman, you know, when he pretty much signed the contract and then obviously that was all snatched away and the whole sort of situation changed. So I had a lot of sympathy for them then. But yeah, hopefully they look back with no regrets at the end of the season. Hopefully United have survived comfortably. Hopefully, you know, some players arrived before Friday. But the fact that it's mid-August and we're still talking about hopefully is, as I say, I keep going back to that word, but that's another concern.
I mean, it's a fair point to make because we probably, I can't remember, but I'm sure we did, we would have looked at the start of the season when the fixtures came out and looked at it and gone, Crystal Palace at home and Nottingham Forest away could have been an awful lot worse. You know you're going to play Man City at some point, and you know, arguably it's probably not the worst thing to get them out of the way early. But those two games, you could look at those and go, there's potentially 4 points there, you know, or even more. But now, as you say, you're going into it now thinking, you've got Man City coming up, the game after Forest, where you could, if things don't turn around fairly quickly, end up three games in and not a point on the board. And if we're being completely honest, barely a shot on target.
But you said that about 4 points. I mean, that was the return last time, wasn't it, when they came up to the Premier League? Was it Bournemouth away, Palace at home? You thought, you know what, obviously decent Premier League sides, but we can have a go at them. And 4 points from the two games, obviously the last minute equaliser from Billy and then beating Palace at home. And that sort of set everything up, didn't it? I think it calmed a lot of nerves and made people think, you know what, we can compete in this division. You know, we can have a go at teams and we can do something here. I'm not saying that's not the case now. I'm not saying they're sat in the dressing room now saying that we're doomed or anything, but it's just that sort of belief that you need a little bit of confidence that, you know, we can lay a glove on people, because Palace are they're a decent Premier League side. You know, they've got some good players, but they're not a top, you know, they're not a top Premier League side. They're not a City, are they? They're not a, you know, a top side. And the fact that, as you say, one shot on target, on another day they could have had, well, they had two goals off, ruled out for offside, didn't they? They had a couple of good chances. Wes made a couple of good saves. Maybe Joe Ward in the mix zone afterwards said that they could have won that 4 or 5 nil. And this is not a, you know, this is not a top side that you sort of look at and go, we're not going to get anything here. So, as I said, I don't want to keep coming back to that word, but that's another concern, you know, going into the season. So, go to Forest on Friday. If you come away with nothing and you're going to City, like you say, and then, it's not the start you would have wanted, is it?
No, and I mean, I hate the sound so negative, but you know, this like I said earlier, the buzz has been, I mean, I can remember whenever going up in the last time in the Premier League in that first match at home against Palace, it was just huge, and you know, everybody was just so excited about it, and I'm yet to feel that excitement. I'm yet to have anybody else express that same kind of excitement, and there does feel a little bit of resignation. I know you touched on it earlier, but you never know. Things can change with a couple of signings. I presume, well, the midfield that played on Saturday, I think unless they play Crewe in the Cup, are unlikely to be played together again this season. Having said that, we spoke about Slimani. He will come in fairly soon. Gus Hamer has signed, so he's going to come in pretty soon. Maybe even, I don't know how long Heckey was likely to wait for him to come into the team, but I would be stunned if he's not playing on Friday night. The midfield, probably still a little bit shy. However, where they're definitely a bit shy at the minute, particularly in terms of injuries as well, is up front. We saw today and yesterday that Chuba Akpom is looking likely to go to Ajax. We don't know for certain whether he was on Sheffield United's radar, but we believe
he was at least on the list.
We do believe that. Yeah, I'm trying to remember back before I went on holiday. So yes, we do know for certain he was on a kind of long list of players that they were looking at. Do we feel that Cameron Archer is the next target, or will there be a surprise? I mean, Gus Hamer was a bit of a turn-up, but given that it happened quite quickly after Sanderberg had left.
Yeah, just touch on Gus to start with. I think that's fair to say that's a very exciting signing. I mean, obviously, he's not a player that... There's always a tendency in football, isn't there, for players to stick in your mind, and you think, he's a good player, him, and then you think, I'm basing that on actually 90 minutes against one team in one game that I've watched. But he's one of those players that as soon as his name was mentioned, you think, oh yeah, I like him, I rate him, I remember him at Coventry, ripping United apart, really. And I also remember, I think he came on in a game the season after, it might have been on the season before, and the sort of electricity in the stadium just changed completely just from him standing on the touchline. I thought, this kid must have something special about him to sort of provoke that. And then obviously seeing him in action and just reading the commentary fans as well, because obviously they'll have seen him at close quarters, and the sort of outpouring of grief that greeted him leaving. He was a real hero. And as much as, just going back to the transfer thing, as much as people talk about, you know, sacrificing Illerman and Sander in the last year of the contracts, it's fair to say that United have exploited that the other way as well. Again, with Akpom, we said before, they were looking at him because he was scheduled to be a free agent next summer. With Gus, they've got him at a reduced fee because obviously he was going to walk for free next summer, or he could have walked for free next summer. So United have sort of turned the tables in that. It's important to remember that they can use that to their advantage as well, as being picked off for their star men. And yeah, he looks a player that's, I think, will generate a lot of excitement amongst United fans. He obviously, we all know what he can do on the ball, but he seems to be a bit of a, I can't use the word on here again, but a plucky character, can we say? Can we say that? A bit of a, I'm trying to stop myself saying the word, but you know the word I'm thinking of, don't you?
You know the word you're thinking
of. He has that side of him, I think, which I think United fans will take to as well. I'm looking forward to seeing him. I think I'd be surprised if he doesn't play on Friday night away at Forest, because United need that spark, don't they? They need it from somewhere. 11 goals last season and tons of assists. He's the man who can provide it. Speaking of goals last season, you know, at 28 in the champ, I think it was last season, he scored against United in both games. Link made a lot of sense, especially a kind of cut price free. There was a bit of reluctance, is probably the right word I'm thinking of, you know, social media amongst fans and everything, as to whether that was a one season kind of, you know, a one-off. I know he kind of changed his role, didn't he, under Michael Carrick and became more of a number 10. Could he have done that in the Prem? I suppose we'll never know now, will we? But he was definitely a player of interest. United did make a bid for him. We know that. And yeah, as you say, he's off to Ajax for what looks like 10 million quid I've seen being mentioned. He would have been worth a gamble on that, given United's still limited funds at Premier League level. Again, we'll never know. It's if, buts and maybes, isn't it? If he goes there and tears it up, we'll probably have an idea. But yeah, Cameron Archer, as you mentioned, is the United are now turning to him, I think. Again, played with Akpom last year at Borough, scored against United, and just looked like what he is, didn't he? A damn good, exciting player. From what we can gather, Villa are open to him leaving. They'll protect themselves with the buyback clause, which a lot of Premier League clubs do this to, you know, that's nothing unusual there. That makes a lot of sense from their point of view. It's just the old Premier League level question, isn't it? You know, we've seen before, with not comparing the two at all, but Rian Brewster, you know, we've seen in the Champs, score a lot of goals on loan, goes back to his parent club, possibly comes for decent money because he won't be cheap, you know, that's just the nature of the business. Van Gogh's left, right, and centre for England on the 21s. You know, there's a lot of similarities there in terms of them as, you know, in terms of the record.
I think it's going to be unfair, but completely natural for Rhian Brewster to be used as a kind of barometer against which players could be compared. And Cameron. That's what's going to happen. And Cameron Archer, on the face of it, looks like another Rhian Brewster. And who knows then? I think essentially when you're shopping in the market that Sheffield United are shopping in, everything. Yeah. I know they say that every transfer is a gamble. Manchester City buying Erling Haaland is not a gamble because Erling Haaland is going to score goals, and Man City can afford to take a hit on if it doesn't. Every player that Sheffield United sign really needs to do well because they can't afford there to be any mistakes in the market there.
100%. That was the.
That's difficult, isn't it? Because it puts a lot of pressure on a player because everybody needs it just to happen.
100%. Yeah, that was the Brewster comparison, was in terms of coming in with that pedigree and that fee as well on top of his shoulders, and then you sort of have to deliver. I know every player has to deliver, but for Sheffield United, I suppose that's even more paramount, isn't it? Because they don't have time to wait. They don't have time for players to become used to Premier League football or get up to speed or whatever. They have to hit the ground running. And Rhian, we're forgetting that he's getting fitter by the week, isn't he? You know, he's sort of been very unfortunate, I think, in terms of the timing of the injuries and the injuries that he's sort of experienced. Who's to say he won't come back and, you know, obviously with a bit of time to get back up to speed and stuff, who's to say he might not come in and make a big impact this season? I hope he does, because he's a really good lad and he's a damn fine player, despite the fact that he's not hit the ground running at United. But yeah, it's just a bit of a note of caution really about Archer, because I'm seeing on here that, you know, he's the answer. He's going to come in and he's going to score all these goals to kind of fire United to safety and all that kind of thing. You know, it's a big adjustment between the champ and the Premier League, especially for a forward, because he still needs to, you know, he can't do it all on his own. He still needs that service behind him. He needs, you know, chances created, for him. That was my concern with Illiman as well. You know, obviously another really damn fine player who we all know how good he was, but he wouldn't be able to do it on his own. You know, he would have still needed that service behind him, or if he needs, you know, if he's creating things, he needs someone to put them away. So, yeah, Cameron Archer would be an exciting signing, but I think there's still that note of caution there in that he isn't a Premier League ready player, because United are not going to be signing Premier League ready players because they can't afford Premier League ready players. That's no secret. As you say, there will be gambles, there will be kind of unpolished diamonds, you know, sort of players who they think can make the step up, but they'll never really know. And some of those won't come off. You know, that's just the nature of transfer business, isn't it? You know, not every transfer is a success. A lot of them don't go right. That's just, you know, if it wasn't exact science, then it would be a pretty boring sport, wouldn't it? You know, there are punts you have to take sometimes on players. There are gambles. Some pay off, some don't. So, yeah, Archer is a player they like, they admire. And if it does come off, it'll be an exciting one. But I think there needs to be that note of caution as well for anyone who comes in between now and the end of the season. It's the same with Traore, same with Slimani, same with Souza, same with Truster. You know, there's not a lot of experience in this country in English football, in the Premier League, amongst those boys. So they will need a bit of time to get up to speed, which goes back to our earlier point about getting them in early in pre-season and kind of adjusting to life in England. You know, they're in the position now where players are playing Premier League games trying to get fitness and trying to get up to speed fitness wise, and that's not, you know, that's an incredibly tough proposition, isn't it? We saw the speed of Palace on Saturday. You know, the Premier League has played at a frightening pace these days. Just the sheer athleticism in this division is remarkable. So that's another challenge United have. They have to try and get their players up to speed in the best league in the world against some of the best players, you know, that are playing the game at the minute. Yeah, over to you, lads. Good luck with that.
Over to you indeed. That's us for the Monday review this week. We'll be back a little bit later in the week to preview the match against Nottingham Forest and talk generally about everything happening at Sheffield United, which I'm sure will be another busy few days, because if nothing else, Sheffield United it is newsy, and basically we're desperate for things to happen. Thanks for joining us, Danny. We will see everybody later on in the week, and we'll be back again Wednesday or Thursday, and then again catch everything you need to know on Sheffield United ahead of Friday night's match against Forest on thestar.co.uk/football. See you again soon.